And into FYI politics, it's Super Tuesday. If you voted yet for your favorite candidate in the Democratic primary, or I suppose if you're a Republican, you have the chance to go out and vote for Trump. But today is Super Tuesday, and that includes Minnesota, your chance to make your preference known for who you think should get the presidential nomination. And polls will remain open until 8 o'clock tonight. Coming up on the show today, we'll be speaking with Professor David Schultz of Hamline University, previewing what could happen this evening. And then a reminder tonight that we are going to be broadcasting live at the Park Tavern over in St. Louis Park. So here's the rundown of what happens tonight with our coverage on AM 950. So Matt McNeil is going to be live in studio from 6 until 7 o'clock, but then our Park Tavern broadcast gets underway at 7 o'clock, as it's going to be hosted by the Devil's Advocates guys, Dom and Crute. If you're not familiar, the Devil's Advocates do our overnight show here on AM 950. They'll be hosting our election night coverage, as they've gone all throughout the country this year covering the primaries, and they'll be here in Minnesota tonight covering what's happening live over at the Park Tavern. Encourage you to go out there and check them out. I'll be out there as well making some cameos during the broadcast, so will Matt McNeil. That event at the Park Tavern is completely free to attend, no cost whatsoever, so hopefully we'll see you over at the Park Tavern this evening with the Devil's Advocates guys, along with Matt and me. So go to am950radio.com if you want more details, am950radio.com, but hopefully we get a nice turnout over there at the Park Tavern this evening. So one of the things that has people concerned about voting in the primary tonight in Minnesota is that all four major political parties in Minnesota, that would be the DFL, the Republican Party, and both the legalized cannabis parties, are going to have access in terms of which ballot you selected. They won't know specifically what candidate you voted for in the primary, but they will know which party you voted with in the primary. And that has some folks concerned, being that this information could technically be released to the general public by any of these four political parties. And depending on what profession you work in, that could make people very concerned, or just make a person concerned who just is overall a little bit shy about their political views. So one thing to point out, though, in terms of what happens tonight and what happens with your voter data is that there's actually about a 10-week period between when the votes are cast tonight and when those election officials are going to get that data of which ballot you selected in the primary this evening. So there is a 10-week window before that information is going to be procured to party officials. So that still does leave some time for the legislature in Minnesota to make some changes of how that data could be used by all four of the major political parties in Minnesota. Now, both the DFL and the Republican Party say these voter lists are very important to the parties, being that they add a lot of value to them in terms of building and fundraising, and could even come into play during redistricting, according to Peter Callahan of MinnPost. So, as Peter Callahan writes in MinnPost about this 2016 bill, which switched Minnesota from a caucus state to a primary state and also included that provision where the major political parties get this data of which ballot you select, writing about the 2016 bill, Peter says that the lists were originally public, which meant that the parties and individuals could request them under the Data Practices Act. But a change was made last year thanks to a provision included in the Omnibus Elections Bill, which we're going to talk about because guess who was involved in that? Oh, Mary Kiffmeyer of all people. Rather than restrict the lists to the parties, meaning the DFL would get the list of only DFL voters and the GOP would only get the list of GOP voters, the bill last year, which Mary Kiffmeyer was instrumental in changing, apparently in this omnibus bill, made much bigger changes. All four major parties, the GOP, the DFL, and the two legalized cannabis parties, would get all of the lists. DFLers in the legislature say the changes came in closed-door conference committee meetings and blame GOP negotiators for the change, and Senate State Government Committee Chair Mary Kiffmeyer, a former Secretary of State, and she doesn't even deny that she prefers this language that was ultimately passed. So she's not even denying the fact that she likes the idea of having all four major political parties having access to all of the data, not just a scenario where only the DFL would have access to the DFL list and the GOP would have access to the GOP list. So what happened, of course, this year is that it spurred a whole bunch of bills to try to add some protection to voters. In fact, it was 9 altogether. They include one provision by the House DFL that was passed by a 72-55 margin that says that the data cannot be published or disseminated, though it could otherwise be used for the parties for political purposes such as building lists and fundraising. There's also been another bill passed by Republicans as well, but either way, we do at least have that 10-week window between tonight and then when the parties are going to get that voter information. So at least the good news is that they're not going to have access to your voter information right this evening. There is going to be that 10-week window, and hopefully there will at least be a chance that some changes could be made to protect voter privacy data. Coming up next, we are going to be speaking with Professor David Schultz of Hamline University as we're going to preview what could happen on Super Tuesday this evening and talk about different candidate strategies going forward after tonight. So stay tuned. We'll speak with Professor Schultz up next.
As a family-owned business, Standard Heating and Air Conditioning has been serving the Twin Cities since 1930. A new furnace or air conditioner from Standard Heating and Air can lower your monthly utility bills, administer more consistent temperatures, and even improve indoor air quality, making your home safer and healthier for the whole family. The average heating and cooling system lasts 15 to 20 years, so if yours is on its last legs, call Standard Heating and Air Conditioning. Learn more at standardheatingdeals.com. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, the comfort you deserve.
Hi, this is Ken Hagland, host of Living Healthy and Aging Well, inviting you to listen to our new show airing on Saturdays from noon to 1, where we talk about your health and your life and provide insights to living and aging well. Each week, we provide answers to important questions regarding health care, elder care, end-of-life care, and caregiver support to help you and your loved ones plan for the future and enjoy your highest quality of life today. Please join us every Saturday from noon to 1 for Living Healthy and Aging Well.
Hello, humans. This is me, Ellie Krug, with Ellie 2.0 Radio on Monday mornings from 7 to 8 a.m. It's another Ellie's Talking Head show this week, a highlight on idealist who may repulse you. I'll also talk about MacArthur Foundation Genius Grants, which empower many idealists. And in my C-block, I talk about white fragility and paying attention to data if you really want to change the world. That's me, a catalyst for learning and change. Ellie 2.0 Radio, engaging and real on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
The number one source of the Twin Cities gay scene is all digital. Follow Twin Cities Gay Scene on Facebook and Twitter. Sign up for the Scene Shot email blast for weekly updates and chances to win great prizes. No app is needed to view the bi-weekly web editions of Scene. It's GLBTQ media for the mobile generation. Find it all at TwinCitiesGayScene.com. That's TwinCitiesGayScene.com.
Moe's Tax Service, family-owned and operated since 1971, providing a full spectrum of tax preparation and associated services. Think about it. Why would you take your most important financial information to a franchise operation with a cheap basic package that goes up dramatically once you're in the door? You can find out all you need to know about Moe's by visiting www.moestax.com. That's M-O-H-S-Tax.com. Or call them at 612-721-2026. Don't be a blockhead. Go to the professionals at Moe's Tax Service.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Welcome back to FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Well, to help preview what could happen tonight on Super Tuesday, we're happy to welcome back Professor David Schultz of Hamline University. Hey, David, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me today.
Yeah, certainly going to be an interesting night tonight, but I want to go back and talk about what happened in South Carolina, since that obviously gave Joe Biden a lot of momentum. Do you think what happened in South Carolina was a trend for Biden possibly doing well tonight, or was it more of a special case of South Carolina being a place where Biden was really well-known and quite popular? What are your thoughts on that?
I think there's two arguments here. One is that he was always expected to do well in South Carolina, and he did. And this became, I'm going to call it part of the mainstream corporate media script for the Biden campaign. They were declaring him dead after the first three caucuses and primaries, and they needed a comeback kid or a Lazarus story, and Joe Biden provided that, so that they were able to declare him resurrected and the rejuvenated Joe Biden in preparation for Super Tuesday, so they would have a story to be able to tell that was beyond the one of what that Bernie Sanders is cleaning up on Tuesday. So that's one. One is that entirely predictable in terms of what Biden would do. The degree to which he won by might be a surprise, but not a surprise that he won. The thing that's the bigger surprise, though, is the degree to which the mainstream moderates of the Democratic Party have coalesced very rapidly around Joe Biden and against Bernie Sanders in the last 48 hours. That is the part that I find more interesting in terms of what South Carolina produced.
And did the moderate Democrats coalesce soon enough in this campaign? Because I even remember back to 2016, Republicans were never able to coalesce around someone to try to knock off Donald Trump, who at that point was very unpopular among a lot of party insiders. Did Democrats do this soon enough in the process?
Well, obviously, we're going to find this out in about 24 hours, but given the fact that across the country, there's the 15% threshold requiring a candidate to get 15% statewide or within congressional districts in order to qualify for delegates, the question becomes, how much of a bump does Joe Biden get in some of the big states across the country, such as California, Texas, North Carolina, Massachusetts? And I think that's going to be the real interesting question here. You know, did it come, as you said here, a little bit too late, you know, for him? But remember, even after today, there has only been 38% of all the delegates selected. 62% are still out there. We're going to still have big states like New York, Florida. They're going to be coming. And it's still possible for those more moderate Democrats to get behind Biden. Or we still don't know what's going to happen with Bloomberg, and they become the rival to Bernie Sanders. Or other scenario, does Biden start to really ramp up a lot of delegates after Super Tuesday that makes it increasingly harder for both Biden and Bloomberg to stay in the race, as opposed to forcing one of them out to make it a one-on-one? These are some of the scenarios that I'm starting to run through in my mind.
I want to talk about Elizabeth Warren now, because we've heard from some folks in the Sanders camp that he should be pressuring her to bow out of the race to try to coalesce the progressive support. But I've always found Warren to be a really interesting candidate, because I would think it might almost play to Bernie's advantage to keep her in the race, because I don't think it's necessarily a given that all of her supporters will necessarily go to Bernie. I could see her still possibly taking votes away from Biden. What are your thoughts on Warren going forward?
Well, I think that's the case, and I also think it's the case that if Warren were to leave the race, she's not necessarily going to embrace Bernie Sanders. Remember, Bernie Sanders is an outsider running as a Democrat. Elizabeth Warren is an insider running as a Democrat. And I think that insider-outsider line is a really thick line. And I could see pressure emerging on Elizabeth Warren if she wants a continued future in the Democratic Party, including perhaps maybe what? Trotting back off to Washington, D.C. in a Biden presidency, that she may come out herself and support Joe Biden as the alternative. And so I think there are progressives who think that Warren and Sanders are alike are not accurate, and I think people who think that progressives who support one will support the other also is not necessarily the case.
So let's talk about what could happen tonight. The two big states that are up for grabs are both California and Texas. If someone, whether it's Biden or Sanders, wins both of those states, do they become the overwhelming favorite going forward, or what do you think about that?
Well, I certainly think if somebody wins those two states, they're going to walk away with an incredible number of delegates at this point. And it's going to clearly put them in the position of being of the front runner at that point. Now, again, coming back to the scenario that we just laid out here, if it's Biden who does this, and I think it's unlikely, but not impossible, unlikely, then I think he clearly becomes the favorite, and the party coalesces around him, the media coalesces around him. On the other hand, if it becomes Sanders who walks away with the trove of the delegates at this point, there still is this faction, powerful faction within the Democratic Party that's going to continue to challenge him and not really recognize him as the front runner and say that, well, maybe we should coalesce around him.
And even if he does well in both of those states, I even go through and look at some of these southern states, because something that at least concerned me on behalf of his campaign, if I'm thinking as a Bernie Sanders strategist, is that what happened back in South Carolina over the weekend reminded me a lot of what happened in 2016 to him, where he got completely blown out a lot in these southern states. What would be a good night for him in some of the southern states taking place tonight? Obviously, he's probably not going to win a lot of these, but if he gets up towards 30 or 35%, what's kind of his goal tonight for trying to perform and at least take some delegates in these southern states?
Well, I think you're right. If he can walk away at this point with, let's say, consistently 25 or 30% of the delegates in many of these southern states, that really is a victory for him. And it's a victory for delegate count. Remember, again, this is the debate that happened 4 years ago where Clinton kept saying, what, I'm going to win in these southern states. Well, guess what? You may win in those southern states and get delegates, but at the end of the day, those states are not going to vote for you in the presidential race. And it's the same thing here. This is only about delegate count at this point, and it's not about the realistic belief that Democrats are going to flip Alabama or they're going to flip Oklahoma tonight. And even also put it back here, the Democrats are not going to flip South Carolina come November. So I think, Bernie, it's really just making sure that he does really well in places like California and Texas, Minnesota, let's say Massachusetts, Vermont, and, you know, sort of the northern states, and just doesn't get blown out. And as long as he walks away, let's say 25% or so of the votes in those states, he's going to get delegate counts that are going to continue to add up for him. So that really has to be his major strategy at this point.
What do you see him doing in those southern, or how do you see him doing in those southern states tonight? Do you think he's improved his position since 2016, or is it just going to be a repeat of what happened back 4 years ago?
Well, again, still obviously speculating here. He has more support among Hispanics now than he did 4 years ago. So in places like Texas, he should do reasonably well. He still hasn't made the inroad in terms of African Americans, and that remains a challenge for him. And so I suspect that he does maybe a little bit better than he did against Clinton 4 years ago because of a more divided field. But I don't see him having, again, opened it up in ways that he really needed to do so with especially with African Americans.
So switching gears now, let's talk a little bit about Mike Bloomberg. What looks like a good night for him tonight, or a bad night that could potentially force him to drop out of the race? What sorts of scenarios could we be looking at for Bloomberg?
Well, I think also he needs to, for it to be a good night for him, probably he's got to win at least one or two states to be able to claim that he's won some states. But also, if he can walk away with, let's say, maybe, you know, 15 or 20% of the delegates at this point, that somewhat vindicates his strategy of having bypassed the first four states. I would say that's his minimum threshold, winning a few states and then in the process, you know, picking up enough delegates that he can say that he is a viable alternative to Bernie Sanders and a viable alternative to Biden. So what I think the scenario has to be right now is that he has to hope that Biden doesn't do as well as some people are predicting, that Bernie Sanders still looks like he's the progressive alternative, and therefore Mike Bloomberg becomes the person who is really the viable challenger and not Joe Biden to the progressive candidate.
And if Bloomberg does end up having a bad night, he'll still pick up some delegates. Do you see those all going to Joe Biden, or is he going to be a little bit more hesitant to try to get behind Joe Biden as opposed to what we saw with Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar?
It all depends what Bloomberg's ultimate game plan is. If his game plan is he really wants to be president, then that's one story. If his game plan is he wants to support a moderate, then he may go in a different direction. And by that different direction, I mean he may then eventually release those delegates or throw them to Biden if it's looking like it's going to be a close convention going into the first round.
Yeah, and talking a little bit about the convention, if we do run into that scenario where no one has a majority of the delegates, which it looks increasingly likely according to a lot of prognosticators, including 538, should Bernie Sanders and his campaign be doing anything to try to win over some of those delegates from the other candidates? I mean, we've obviously seen Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg encourage, well, it looks like they'll be encouraging their delegates to move over to Joe Biden. Should he be trying to make an effort to try to win over some delegates' second choices too?
Well, he can try to do that. I think it's something he's going to have to do. But I think that, as we already saw from some headlines from the New York Times, for example, I think the superdelegates, many of them, are going to make it clear that they don't want Sanders. And I think he's going to have a hard time moving those superdelegates over, because guess what? They're going to be voting in that first round if nobody goes in with a clear majority. Now, maybe he tries to move some, but right now, I would be really suspect if he's really in a position of being able to move, let's say, any – I mean, he's not going to be able to move Klobuchar delegates, what few she had, or Buttigieg, et cetera, like that. And certainly, obviously, not anybody who's with Bloomberg. So I really do see it emerging as a Bernie versus everybody else at this point.
And I still look at it, the strategy of his campaign. Maybe you try to work something out with Warren. Even though she might not go into the campaign with many delegates, she could still have maybe 200. And if Bernie goes in with, let's say, 1,700 or 1,800, where he's just short of that threshold, maybe if he does work out some sort of deal with Warren, he could pick up those delegates enough to put him above that threshold, which isn't it like 1,991?
Yep, yes, yeah. You're assuming that Warren picks up very many delegates tonight and that she survives beyond tonight. And I'm still not persuaded, even though she says she's still in for the long haul and so forth, I'm still not persuaded that at the end of the day she has the resources or she's going to have the ability to move on. I actually think she's, you know, and again, unless I'm completely wrong here, I think she's going to become increasingly a marginalized player that, again, still coming back to what I said earlier, I don't think she's going to come and support Bernie at the end of the day.
Oh, yeah, and that would certainly be a really big development in the campaign, but you could be right about that, where maybe she wants to keep her place within the Democratic Party. So it'll be interesting to see what happens tonight, especially if she ends up losing her home state of Massachusetts, because you have to imagine if she loses Massachusetts, there's no way she can stay in the race beyond today.
No, you're absolutely correct. And there's a decent chance of it. Even though she said she's not worried about states, the symbolic victory for Bernie Sanders and knocking her off in her home state will be too great at this point. And also, I do think at this point that if she loses, the pressure will still come from what? From the establishment Democratic Party for her to get out so that what? So that she can throw whatever weight she has behind a Biden and basically move it forward. Again, my point that I've been making a few times today is the fact that I think progressives think the vote between Warren and Sanders is fungible. I don't think it is. I think that a lot of the progressive vote, certainly not all of it, is going to be Warren or a more establishment Democrat, Bernie, but not an establishment Democrat. And for Warren herself, she's an establishment Democrat. She's going to be very hard-pressed for her to throw her votes and throw her support for Sanders.
Yeah, I think you're correct with that, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens tonight with her campaign going forward. Then, of course, with the front runners too, it'll be interesting to see, obviously, what happens with both Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden. Hey, we've been speaking with Professor David Schultz of Hamline University, talking a little bit about what could happen tonight here on Super Tuesday. Professor Schultz, really appreciate the time today.
No problem. Thank you for calling.
And you can find more about what Professor Schultz writes over at schultzestake.blogspot.com. That's schultzestake.blogspot.com to find everything he writes about politically. We'll take a break and come on back with more on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson.
Located just south of downtown Minneapolis, the Blaisdell is the perfect venue for your next event. The Blaisdell is a fresh, modern, newly remodeled historic mansion with spaces that can accommodate groups of 25 to 700. While perfect for weddings, the Blaisdell also includes rooms with high-tech audio and video equipment for your company's next gathering. So whether it's a dream wedding or impressing colleagues and clients, choose the Blaisdell as your next event venue. Select dates are still available. More at theblaisdell.com.
Native Roots Radio is proud to announce we've added an extra hour.
Yeah, Chushka, 1 hour goes by too fast.
That's right, Uncle Curtis.
I'll have extra time to share important information about our sacred animals.
And report national and native news from all over the country and Canada.
This new hour is sponsored by Robbins Kaplan LLP, dedicated to redefining excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country.
Saturdays from 1 to 3 p.m.
We are awake.
Hi, I'm Frank Brown, owner of the only minority-owned union print shop in Minnesota.
Do you work with political campaigns?
Yes, we have years of experience helping campaigns.
Do you print postcards? Do you also mail them out?
Yes, we do mail them out. We print everything.
Do you print lawn signs?
Yes, we print everything. Choose the only minority-owned union print shop in Minnesota for all your political campaign needs. Learn more at mpuptown.com. Miniman Press Uptown. We print everything.
Considering replacing your vacuum? What do you do with the old one? Throw it in the garage? Worse yet, throw it in the garbage? How about trade it in and save? A1 Vacuum in Roseville has been around forever, and they take trade-ins. When you trade in your old vacuum, you save. So if it's time to replace that old clunker headed for the garage or landfill, bring it in to A1 Vacuum in Roseville. You can find A1 Vacuum at a-1vacuum.com or call 651-222-6316.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for partly sunny skies today with a high near 41. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 25. Wednesday, partly sunny with a high near 42. And Thursday, partly cloudy with a high around 41. Moe's Tax Service in St. Paul can help with all your personal and business tax needs. And in addition to helping you with your taxes, Moe's also provides accounting and payroll services. Call 612-721-2026 or visit moestax.com. Moe's Tax Service, working for you, not the IRS. Oh, the only thing wrong with the song here, Patrick, is that it shouldn't be money, money, money. It should be delegates, delegates, delegates. That is the name of the game. And we're going to be talking about delegates for the rest of the show because I want to quell some fears about people who think, oh, well, the DNC is going to steal the nomination from my candidate. All right, yeah, mostly looking at you there, Bernie Sanders, because I think it's actually important that you understand how the process works. In essence, as I read through how delegates are selected and how delegates vote, it's not too dissimilar from ranked choice voting, something that a lot of Democrats are very much in favor of. There are a lot of parallels between the current delegate system and ranked choice voting, and we're going to talk about this here during the rest of the show. So the first thing to bring up is that to get a majority of the delegates at the Democratic National Convention, you need 1,991. So 1991, 1,991, that is the magic number. If you get that many delegates, you have a majority at the National Convention and you win the nomination. Now, what's likely to happen is that neither Bernie Sanders nor Joe Biden or any of the other candidates are likely to reach that magic number of 1,991 on their own. If you run through some of those 538 scenarios, Matt talked a little bit about this yesterday, but if you go to the 538 website, you can
run different scenarios in terms of which candidate wins what state, and they'll project how many candidates or how many delegates your candidate will end up with. And under most scenarios, both Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden don't reach that magic number of 1,991. So what does that mean? Well, you need the support of the delegates of candidates that dropped out of the race. In other words, you need to be their second choice. And already we're seeing a lot of the moderate Democratic candidates or former candidates like Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg try to urge their supporters to go vote for Joe Biden. So we'll continue talking about this in just a second to go through more detail about how this process works. It's really interesting going state by state with the delegation in terms of what happens when you have a candidate who drops out of the race. What happens with their delegates? The rules differ from state to state, including Minnesota, which has a very unique set of rules. But in essence, the entire system is a form of ranked choice voting. So what you have to do if you're someone like a Bernie Sanders or a Joe Biden, you have to get those delegates from the candidates that dropped out of the race. So we'll continue talking about this in just a second, but we got some full phone lines, so let's get to those phone calls and talk to Gary in Minneapolis first. Hi there, Gary. What's on your mind today?
Well, I'm kind of disturbed how they're ganging up on Bernie, you know, and I've already voted. I voted for Elizabeth. Elizabeth and Bernie, they're the only two I was raised in a union movement family, and bread and butter issues, you know, Hubert Humphrey and Roosevelt and Truman, those kind of people. They fought for working people, and Bernie and Elizabeth are the only two talking that way. I'm very disturbed what's going on, and you know, Robert Kennedy said something very, very poignant once. He said, I'm afraid that he was feared that someday all the politicians will be millionaires. It's more than that now, of course, more than millionaires with all the tax cuts to the rich. And those are, if there's a few of the 8 millionaires, they'll be owned by the rich. And Bernie isn't. And the AOC that campaigns for him, that young woman out east, New York, she's not either. She bumped off one of them corporate Democrats. So, you know, and Truman said, you run a Republican-style Democrat against a real Republican, the real Republican wins every time. We saw that with Hillary. We saw with Al. I know they cheat, but they still get so close, and they got their methods of getting their guy in there and getting their judges in there. And mm-hmm. It's really frustrating.
Yeah, I don't disagree with some of your points there, Gary, and thanks for the phone call. When you do generally nominate a safe candidate, and this is true for both Democrats and Republicans, you typically lose in the general election. But going back to what he was saying, how Gary doesn't like the fact that, oh, they're ganging up on Bernie Sanders by having all of these dropped-out candidates having their supporters go towards Joe Biden. Well, guess what? That's actually within the rules. Like I said, it's a form of ranked choice voting. What you're telling all of those supporters of Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar is to make your second choice Joe Biden. And that's well within the rules. And this is something that I think the Sanders campaign needs to approve upon. You need to compromise in a sense that, well, maybe you need to offer, let's say, Amy Klobuchar a spot on the ticket, maybe make her your vice presidential candidate to try to get her delegates to come your way. Or maybe you promise Pete Buttigieg some sort of position within your cabinet. Now, maybe those aren't the best solutions in terms of trying to get those delegates over, but either way, you need to play that game. It's ranked choice voting. You got to get those other delegates to support you to have a chance at the nomination. And I think it's really going to come down to, depending on what happens tonight, Elizabeth Warren's delegates. We'll talk more about that in just a second. But first, let's go to David the Trucker. Hey, David, been a while since I've talked to you. What's on your mind today?
Oh, man, I think everybody is selling Elizabeth Warren short.
Oh, I think for sure. Oh, yes.
Today mm-hmm. than people expect. I think that she would have done better in Nevada if the last debate had happened before the vote. And the 14 states today, they all have heard her talk, and they saw the debate. I think she's going to do a whole lot better than people think.
I think you're absolutely right, David, where I don't think it's a guarantee that, for instance, the supporters of Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg are going to go to Joe Biden, I think there's a very good chance, and Tom Hartman was talking about this last hour, I think a lot of those could end up going to Elizabeth Warren. And I think you alluded to this as well, David, where a lot of the late deciders in the recent elections, whether it was Nevada or New Hampshire, they were going towards Elizabeth Warren. I still think she has very much an uphill climb in terms of trying to get the nomination, but I would not completely write her off. I think there could still be a path for her where she can try to portray herself as being the compromise between Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders.
She's the woman with the plan.
Mm-hmm. She's got a plan for it. You're right. I mean, I'll be honest. I think her odds of still getting the nomination are very, very low, but I still think there is a chance. In other words, from Dumb and Dumber, you're telling me there's a chance.
I agree with you.
Yeah. Hey, good to hear from you, David. Hopefully we can chat another time. Appreciate the phone call. Hey, let's move on and talk to Doug over in Minnetonka. Hey there, Doug. What do you think?
Hey, well, let me first say that everybody on the Democratic stage during the debates agreed to follow the DNC rules regarding delegate count if nobody had a clear path once they got there, except for Bernie Sanders, who flat out said whoever has the most delegates going in there, regardless of whether it's 1991 or just a plurality, should be the nominee. He was the only one. So that's troubling to begin with. Number two, he has the best chance of going into the convention with a leading delegates, no question.
Yep.
Because they think Joe Biden has been wounded by the Trump smear machine and his allies. But having said that, I firmly believe in my heart, and I will vote for Sanders if he's the candidate, but I firmly believe that Donald Trump would beat Bernie Sanders because of the socialist tag that they're going to hang on him. And I'm not saying Bernie's a socialist. As far as Joe
just
Biden
to stop
goes,
you there, you know what I found interesting, Doug? It seems like they've moved away from the socialist label, and they're starting to call him a communist. That's what I found interesting over the past few weeks.
That. Yes, I did see that, and I've seen that on some of the blogs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not terribly concerned about that, but they do want to run against – Trump wants to run against Bernie. He does not want to run against Biden. Senator Ron Johnson now is stirring the pot again, looking for more dirt on Hunter Biden. It was just announced. And, you know, so Joe Biden has been wounded, although what I'm worried about is the down ballot races when it comes to whoever our nominee is. And I firmly believe in my heart that Bernie Sanders can't win. I'm not saying he would make a bad president, and I will vote for him, as I said, if he's the candidate, but I think a more moderate candidate has a better chance and carrying the down-ballot candidates on his or her coattails.
All right. Appreciate the phone call there, Doug. So some interesting points you were making. I'm not sure I disagree or I agree with all of them that you're talking about when it comes to Bernie running in the general election. Now, like I was saying, I think he needs to take a much better strategy when he's trying to get delegates at the national convention because he needs that magic number of 1991. But if he does manage to actually get that majority, I don't think he would be as weak of a candidate in the general election as a lot of folks are talking about. I see a lot of parallels between him and even Paul Wellstone back in 1990 where, yeah, a lot of people disagree with his positions, but they like the fact that he's genuine, he's personable, and you know where he stands on the issues. He comes across as being very real. Don't underestimate how much people appreciate that, even though they might be scared off by some of his policy positions. Just the issue for Bernie is actually trying to get that nomination in the first place. Like I was saying, it's all about getting those delegates, and like it or not, it's a form of ranked choice voting. If you go into the convention saying whoever has a plurality should end up winning the nomination, well then, I hope you're not someone who's a supporter of ranked choice voting, because essentially, that's what you're arguing against. So, as our previous caller, was it Doug, talking about in Doug in Minnetonka, was talking about, yeah, heading into the convention, Bernie Sanders probably will end up with a plurality. In fact, running through some of those 538 scenarios, if Bernie ends up winning in both California and Texas this evening, those are, of course, the two big states, he'll very likely end up with somewhere around 1,700 delegates, which would put him anywhere between 200 and 300 delegates short of getting the nomination. And that's where you have to go through and work with some of these candidates who don't have a shot at the nomination to try to get them on board with you. And that's where I think it really comes down to Elizabeth Warren. Especially if she can hang on in Massachusetts and keep running, there's a chance she could end up with 200 or 300 delegates, and she could be the person that ends up deciding this nomination. Because we know, ultimately, that the delegates for Mike Bloomberg and for Amy Klobuchar and for Pete Buttigieg, they're very likely all going to go and vote for Joe Biden. And even if you combine them all together, that probably still won't put Joe Biden over the finish line. Doing the math, that would probably still leave him with about 1,700 or 1,800. So I really think it's going to be Elizabeth Warren and her 200 or so delegates that could really end up deciding things. And that's where, if you're sitting there on the Sanders campaign, you should be trying to talk to Warren's supporters, or not just her supporters, but Warren herself in the campaign to try to work something out. Because if you can get her 200 or so supporters or delegates on board, that might put you over the threshold of that 1,991 number. Continuing along, we got Julie in Minneapolis. Hi there, Julie. What's on your mind today? Julie, let's see. Do we have you there? Julie, there we go. Hey, Julie.
Warren was 16%. Warren was 16% in California.
Hey, Julie, can I get you just to back up for 1 second? We missed the beginning of what you were saying.
Oh, yeah. I just want to say that I saw a poll as of yesterday. Elizabeth Warren was at 16% in California. So she will be picking up delegates.
And a lot
California.
Of them, yeah.
And
she gets at least 15, yeah.
Didn't see the figures for Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I'm really concerned if Biden gets the nominations. Of course I'm going to vote for whoever gets our nomination. But I'm very concerned about the bloopers that he said lately, his confusion that hits him. I mm-hmm. don't see him eviscerating Donald Trump on the stage like, for instance, Elizabeth Warren could do, as mm-hmm. she showed she could do with Bloomberg. So I hope he watches some film. I think they're going to have to keep Biden on a teleprompter. He did great in his acceptance speech. He was profound. He was great. But he had a teleprompter. And so, you know, I'm just concerned about Biden, that he doesn't have the right kind of killer instinct. So that's kind of just what I wanted to say.
Yeah, and what I've heard from a lot of Biden folks is that typically he does much better in a general election debate where he's debating a Republican. The essence of what they say is that, yeah, he actually struggles when he has to debate with fellow Democrats. So the argument they make is that while he might not look his best when he's trying to speak off the cuff in a debate with other Democrats, they say he typically fares better when he's debating a Republican. And the big example they point to is back in 2008 when he was debating Sarah Palin. They thought he had a good performance. But, yeah, he certainly does have his fair share of gaffes, and maybe that's part of the appeal to Joe Biden, where it's part of his personality and makes him come off as being genuine. But, yeah, he most certainly does have his fair share of gaffes, including calling it Super Thursday at one point, and I think mistakenly saying he was running for the Senate instead of the presidency. So if he makes it part of his personality, maybe he can actually make that appealing. But it is a little concerning sometimes when you think about that, when you have some of those gaffes that do happen with Joe Biden. We're at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Coming up next, we're going to continue talking about delegates and how they're awarded. Because I want to continue to emphasize, there's really no such thing as stealing the nomination. It's trying to get those delegates from candidates who dropped out. That's what's going to decide the nomination. And like I was saying, I think it's going to come down to those Warren delegates. We'll continue talking about that up next as you're listening to FYI Politics with Brett Johnson.
Tom Hartman here, letting you know how you can go solar with All Energy Solar, even way up north in Minnesota. Lots of people ask them, isn't Minnesota too cloudy for solar? No. The truth? For one thing, Minneapolis gets nearly as much sun each year as Houston, Texas. But it isn't just about how much sun you get. It's also about having access to great local incentive programs that make solar affordable. Learn what your options are to save with solar and visit allenergysolar.com today.
Hi, this is Laura with Food Freedom Radio. On February 29th, we talk with the author of Big Farms Make Big Flu. Rob Wallace believes that regenerative farming can help prevent the spread of viruses. On March 7th, we talk with the new executive director of Minnesota 350, Sam Graham, about permaculture, climate justice, and more. On March 7th, we're going to be talking with the founder of Be Safe Minneapolis and owner of Minnehaha Landscaping about how to transition to regenerative yards and gardens. So tune in live on Saturdays at 8 a.m. Or if you miss any shows, listen to the podcast, am950radio.com.
Hi, I'm Peter Solak.
And I'm Adam Ostrowski.
We are here at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces to talk about the joy of live fire cooking. Cooking over a live fire is the oldest and most basic form of cooking.
What's new is in the way fire is handled and its heat is managed.
It's easier to experience and enjoy the smell and taste of food cooked over a live fire.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces sells and installs live fire grills, fire pits, and ovens. Let us help you experience the smell, the taste, the fun of cooking with fire.
Pizza was first made and is still best made in an open fire oven. The radiant and conductive heat of a live fire is unmatched for wood roasting and baking artisan breads, too.
Come see the many ways you can cook over a live fire.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces has over 35 working wood and gas units on display at the corner of East Franklin and Riverside Avenue in Minneapolis. More information at woodlandstoves.com. Find the fire that works for you. Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, out of the ordinary products and services since 1977.
For the final segment of FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. So that magic number you need at the Democratic National Convention, 1,991. And it's very likely that neither Joe Biden nor Bernie Sanders are going to end up with that magic number of 1,991. In fact, there's a very good chance that Bernie Sanders will have a plurality. And depending on how he does during the rest of the primary contests, he's likely to finish somewhere between 1,500 and 1,750 delegates. He'll end up somewhere in there, while Joe Biden will probably end up somewhere between 1,300 and 1,500 delegates. So then it comes down to the delegates of the other candidates who have dropped out of the race and how they decide to vote. And like I was saying, like a broken record, it's ranked choice voting. It comes down to who is the second preference of delegates of a Pete Buttigieg or an Amy Klobuchar or soon to be Mike Bloomberg or others who already have those delegates. So the rules in terms of how this works is this, as I read up on Ballotpedia. So the delegate selection rules do not directly address how a candidate's withdrawal from the race before the convention affects the delegates pledged to that candidate. However, in 13 states, including Minnesota, they do have statutes that establish provisions for the release of delegates either upon a candidate's withdrawal or after a specific number of ballots have been taken at the national convention. And what I'm guessing is that in the 37 other states that don't have rules, is that if a candidate says, like for instance, if Pete Buttigieg has a whole bunch of delegates from Iowa, he can release them and say, you're no longer pledged to me. I want you to go support Joe Biden instead. And I'm assuming a lot of those delegates probably will go on and vote for Joe Biden, but they're by no means pledged to go vote for Biden after they are released from Buttigieg. But 13 states do have specific rules. And Minnesota's is really interesting. Because even if a candidate, like let's say an Amy Klobuchar or a Pete Buttigieg or a Mike Bloomberg, even if they do have Minnesota delegates, guess what? They cannot be released to go vote for another candidate. In fact, Minnesota is the only state in the country that specifically says the results of the presidential nomination primary must bind the election of delegates in each party. So even if some of these candidates who drop out get delegates in Minnesota, they cannot be released because that is a rule that the Minnesota DFL has put in place. And in fact, we're the only state that does that. But in lots of other states, you're going to run into that where you could have delegates for an Elizabeth Warren or for a Pete Buttigieg or for an Amy Klobuchar or for a Mike Bloomberg that could be released to go vote for a Joe Biden or for a Bernie Sanders. And that's the problem I have with the Sanders campaign, is that you need to somehow try to work with the other candidates, or at least their supporters or their delegates, to try to get some of them on your side. Like I was saying, he's probably going to have a ceiling of right around 1,750, which would only put him about 100 or 200 delegates short of the threshold he needs for the nomination. And the one candidate that would be most likely to have their delegates go and switch to Bernie would probably be Elizabeth Warren. And that's, like I'm saying, ultimately how I think this is going to go down. It might be decided by how Elizabeth Warren's delegates end up going. But one of the big caveats with that, though, is how long Warren, of course, stays in the race. I think that largely will break down as to how she does in her home state of Massachusetts. Because if Bernie ends up beating her in Massachusetts, well, then she's probably going to drop out and not have as much power at the convention as she might otherwise have, where she could have a scenario where she has like 200 or 300 delegates. So Massachusetts will certainly play a big role in that. But as I even think about this more, I would think if you're a Bernie supporter, you should want Elizabeth Warren to stay in the race for as long as possible. And for this reason, there's no guarantee that supporters of Elizabeth Warren are all going to go towards Bernie Sanders as a second choice. Now, here's why I say that. So let's say Elizabeth Warren in a state is only getting 10% of the vote. Now, let's say 8 percentage points among those 10 percentage points, in other words, 8 of 10 of those voters, would make Bernie their second choice. But 2 of those voters would make a Joe Biden their second choice. By leaving Elizabeth Warren in the race, you potentially actually take votes away from a Joe Biden. So it sounds a little counterintuitive, but I think in essence, if you're a Bernie supporter, you're better off keeping Elizabeth Warren in the race, because it's not a guarantee that all of her supporters' second choice is Bernie Sanders. And by leaving her in the race, you could potentially keep some votes away from Joe Biden. And therefore, when you get to the convention, you try to work some sort of deal where maybe you make her the vice president, or you offer some exclusive cabinet position. Then you try to get all of those delegates that might have gone towards a Joe Biden back into your camp. So it sounds a little counterintuitive, like I'm saying, but I think it could be advantageous for the Sanders campaign to actually have Warren stay in the race as long as possible. So a little bit of delegate math we did during the second half of the show. Hopefully that all made sense. And we'll hopefully see you tonight at the Park Tavern for our live broadcast beginning at 7 o'clock. Free event, no registration needed. The Devil's Advocates guys will be out there. I'll be out there. Matt will be out there. We'll see you tonight, 7 o'clock, live broadcast at the Park Tavern. Stay tuned. We got Matt McNeil coming up next.